Hey, good morning. It's Patricia Murphy. It's Friday. This is Seattle Now. The Mariners are out of time. Seattle police are taking their time getting vaccinated, and a lone beluga whale is getting some me time in Puget Sound. At least we hope that's what he's doing. We're closing out the week with Chase Burns and Andrew Walsh in a minute, but first, let's get you caught up. A day after being sharply criticized by most of her colleagues for signing off on a racist campaign mailer, there's more fallout for King County Councilmember Kathy Lambert. Yesterday, the Seattle Times editorial board rescinded its endorsement of Lambert and backed her opponent. The editorial board wrote that Lambert showed a disturbing lack of contrition for the mailer that went to thousands of people. On Twitter, Councilmember Girmay Zahalai, who was featured as a socialist puppet master, thanked the Times and his supporters, but seemed ready to move on, saying it was back to work now. A former Rainier Beach basketball star is accused of orchestrating a fraud scheme that cost the NBA millions. Federal prosecutors said yesterday that Terrence Williams was part of a group of 18 former players who filed fake insurance claims over a period of years. The scheme defrauded the league's health plan out of almost $4 million. Another local player, former Garfield High and UW alum Tony Roten Jr., was also among the players charged. And it was not a pretty night at Lumen Field. The Seahawks lost to the Rams to fall to 2-3 on the year. But worse, they lost Russell Wilson to an injured finger on his throwing hand in the third quarter. Pete Carroll called it badly sprained after the game. Wilson hasn't missed a game in his 10 years with the Hawks. They get a little extra time off until their next game against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. It's Friday again. The National Weather Service says get ready for some sweater weather, people. Highs in the 50s, lows in the 40s over the next couple of days. Stranger editor Chase Burns is here. Hey, Chase.
Hey, how's it going? Are you chilly yet?
I am. Well, you know, it's funny. They say sweater weather here, but I'm from Jersey. That's leather weather where I live from. That's when you brought out your biker's leather. Good to see you, Chase. Andrew Walsh is here as well, co-host of the Too Beautiful to Live podcast. Andrew, good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me back. I'm always head to toe in leather. You know that.
Hey, you too. Chase, I heard you were up in the North End at Best Buy taking the train. And Andrew, you were taking the train to the Mariners game.
Yeah, no, it was so great. I mean, I think we might talk about the Mariners playoff run a little bit later, but it was a heck of a day for my neighborhood and for Seattle to just like hop on the train and go to a game that mattered in October. It was unique.
And you went to the good game, Andrew.
I did. I went to the winning game on Saturday, the come from behind win. It was something.
Yeah, yeah. I went to the game on Sunday, which was not nearly as much fun and did not turn out the way anybody wanted it to.
Mm-mm. But you got to say goodbye to Kyle Seager.
That was a very moving moment, and I had no idea who that guy was, but I saw everybody start crying, and I just went with it.
Yes, you know what? It turns out there is literally crying in baseball, and it's okay. We saw veterans crying. We saw the young rookies crying. I got a little choked up, and it was okay.
Yeah, yeah. Chase, you come from a baseball family, but you're not a real sportsy guy.
Yeah, my dad was a professional baseball player. Didn't last very long. My cousin is a professional baseball player. I've gone to a lot of baseball games, but none of it has stuck. The rules are always a little confusing. I'm always like, why are there so many innings? Why do they play the same people 3 days in a row? But I will say that I saw the Saturday game, and I was like moved by all of the emotions. And I was like, maybe now I'm going to get into baseball. And I went online and I bought like an MLB subscription to try to watch the game on Sunday. I tried to buy a ticket, but then by like, I don't know, 1:30 or whatever on Sunday, I was like, you know what? Maybe next year I'll get into baseball.
Yeah, they didn't win, but they did make The Onion, you guys. The headline, of course, Mariners promise fans they'll be back to finish 2022 playoff race in even more heartbreaking fashion. See you next year.
You know how sometimes you're reading a real life newspaper, but the headline is so ridiculous, you have to ask yourself, wait a second, is this The Onion? This is the only time the opposite of that has happened to me. Like, I knew it was The Onion, but I read the headline. I'm like, but also, this could be the Seattle Times.
Well, and you know, the long-suffering fan story is a pretty strong story, you know? I don't know. We may not want to give that away anytime soon.
Yeah, we do.
I don't know. I think at this point, Powerball game has better odds. But, you know, speaking of playing the odds, the October 18th vaccination deadline is coming up, and things are getting sticky. As of this taping, nearly 300 Seattle police officers still need to prove they've been vaccinated. And, you know, Durkin telling officers, please get your shots because we actually need you. What do you two think is going on here?
I don't know. There have been a lot of people sort of joking that the police will kind of defund themselves in a way by failing to get vaccinated. You know, we've been hearing from a lot of people over the past year who say that, like, they disagree with defunding the police because they think that the police force actually needs more investment. And those people should be very concerned, I think, by this development, because if the force fails to get vaccinated in a sufficient way, you know, that'll lead to sharp staffing crisis. And I think one thing that often gets overlooked with the defund the police movement is that the defund demands are, like, paired with calls for alternative community safety programs. It's presented as a process. It's not an immediate shift, but this would be an immediate shift. We would see, you know, we would lose a lot of officers. And I know the numbers are moving, and the state patrol's numbers were like in the 60s and then bumped up to above 90% recently. So we could see these numbers bounce back, but it's certainly not great for the city.
Well, and I actually wonder how many of these folks are just not saying yet that they have been vaccinated, because I, you know, I'm just crabby and stubborn enough to do something like that, to just not say until I have to say at the last minute, just not happy about it, right? I wonder if there is some of that at work too, because like you pointed out, Chase, 93% of the State Patrol employees have complied with the governor's order.
Yeah, it just sort of, it kicks off all these headlines and this worrying, as it should, because suddenly it would be, you know, a significant amount of people who would have to leave. But I think at the end of the day, cops should take this really seriously. I think there was a study that came out in September that COVID-19 was the leading cause of death for law enforcement officers in 2021. And earlier this week, King County said that over the last 30 days, an unvaccinated person's risk of dying from COVID-19 was 57 times higher than a vaccinated person's risk of the same age. And those are numbers from our own county. So we just, you know, we have to take this seriously. COVID-19 is real.
And being a police officer is a high touch profession, right? Yeah. You are right there.
And not to be overly emotional about this from my perspective, but it just gives me more of a sense of us versus them when we're talking about the citizenry and the police force, the people who are supposed to serve and protect, of course. And like, one way of protecting the population is by getting vaccinated and by wearing masks. And I know this is very anecdotal, but, you know, even during the height of the pandemic, on the occasions that I would see officers, you know, confronting somebody in the street, or a car is pulled over in my neighborhood and you see, and usually there's like more than one police car there for some reason, I don't think I've ever seen them masked before. And that's not a religious thing, and that's not a health exemption.
Well, and no matter how you slice it, a disruption in service, no matter how you feel about the service from the police department, is a very significant problem in the city if this comes to fruition. And we do have a large number of officers who will no longer have jobs because of it. Seattle City Council passed a resolution this week to decriminalize psychedelics like mushrooms, ayahuasca, and ibogaine. Not peyote, though. It's not a judgment thing. It's only because it's ecologically sensitive. All of this, of course, not aimed at tripping for fun, but the possibility of more options for mental health care. I'm fascinated by this, by how much we're learning about the brain and how we can treat depression.
Yeah, and as we move into decriminalizing and especially legalization, it allows us to study. And that's what we've seen with cannabis, and something that we're held back with cannabis a lot because there's not national legalization. But I just seems like this is a wave that we're riding. Obviously, in some places of the country, we're still talking about, like, oh, are we going to legalize weed? But, you know, in other places of the country, especially the West Coast, we're seeing significant movement. And I don't know about you, but anecdotally, it just seems like there's a lot of support in this area. You know, my grandma I talked to her, and she's like, she's down with shrooms. I heard Elon Musk talking this week about how he thinks that, legalization is sort of inevitable, whether it's through legislatures or through voting. We will see. But I think the tide is definitely changing here.
Well, and JAMA published a study last year that combining therapy with psilocybin was four times more effective than antidepressants. Half of the people who had a good outcome in that study no longer qualified as being depressed.
I have more questions about this than comments because you guys clearly know way more about it than I do. If you don't mind me asking, Chase, and this could be a sensitive question, what is your grandma's experience with this? Is she like microdosing in a medical way or recreational?
Look, I wish she was microdosing. Really, she's like a older baby boomer hippie, and I think she's not afraid of it, but she doesn't, she lives in Michigan, so she doesn't do a bunch of microdosing. I have done some microdosing myself, and I find that it's wonderful. I think that it's something that can treat a lot of different things.
Oregon a year ago voted to allow the state to create an entire mental health treatment program around psilocybin. The science is starting to build, and we know so much more about the brain now. So it's fascinating.
Not to be overly flip about this, but if you're macro dosing, take it from me, don't watch American Horror Story because that was the last time I tried shrooms, and that was season one, if that tells you anything. That scared me off it.
Speaking of loneliness and depression, and not in a flip way, I'm wondering what's going on with this beluga swimming around Puget Sound. It was in Elliott Bay on Monday. Did you two see the video?
Yeah, it was just a little bit. You just kind of saw the white head pop up. I was like shocked with how like white beluga whales are. There was the little kid on the boat that was like, "Ooh, I hope it doesn't like crash into us." And I was sort of with that kid. I was like, if I saw that little head popping up, I'd be like, "We are goners." I also just watched Piranha 3D last night, the 2010 movie. So I'm a little paranoid about things jumping out of the water.
I'm not familiar with that documentary, but I'm sure it's very informative. Piranha 3. Did you guys see the blurb? I think the Seattle Times reprinted something from the Tacoma Times back in April of 1940, the last time they think a beluga whale was sighted in these waters. Because, this thing's probably a very long way from home. But the little blurb from the 1940s Tacoma Times was so funny and cute. Like, you couldn't not read it in like an old-timey like radio voice. Like, "Looks like this sea whale's going to see the governor. Slow down. We have a process around these parts." It was so cheeky and funny. It was front page news in 1940.
That's funny, Andrew.
It could be, I mean, again, just based on what I was reading, it could be just good news that this whale is taking a journey. But there's a lot of, it sounds like ecological reasons why this might not be such a good thing too, and it could be scarcity of food or that algae that is poisonous to a lot of animal life. So, it's amazing, and you watch it, and it's majestic, and we kind of, I think, all want that experience to be close to something like this. But then when you start to think about maybe what it's going through, it makes me a little bit bummed out. I hope the guy's okay.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of tragic at first. I was like, "Oh no, it's supposed to be with its pod." And then I did read that quote in KW from the person from the Orca Network who was like, "Sometimes whales and dolphins just go for a walkabout." And I was like, "Oh, that's cute." I was like, "That's inspirational." To be honest, I almost cried. But I do think it should probably be reunited with its pod.
Yeah, I want to hope for the walkabout as well, Chase, because again, I looked at that whale and I thought, "Oh no. You're far from home, but maybe, just like me, it ran away all the way across the country."
Maybe it's starting a podcast in Seattle.
We have enough podcasts in Seattle. No more, please.
All right, we're leaving it there. Thanks to our guests, Chase Burns, editor at The Stranger, Andrew Walsh, co-host of the Too Beautiful to Live podcast. Thanks so much, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's all for today. Jason Pagano produced today's show. Our production team is Claire McGrain, Jenny Cecil Moore, Diana Opong, and Caroline Chamberlain Gomez. Matt Jorgensen does our theme music. I'm Patricia Murphy.